south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, a lot of would-be expats, that is, expat gonna-bes and wannabes, they often get sucked into the idea that if they come down to any particular Latin American country, they could just easily sign up for benefits in the national healthcare system, and any little or large medical problem that comes along, they'll be well taken care of. In other words, they've heard, quite erroneously, that national healthcare systems in Latin America are pretty good. Well, they're good if you're never sick. I remember hearing that over and over again from gringos and expats living in Costa Rica and in Ecuador, the two Latin American national healthcare systems you hear so much about, because Ecuador and Costa Rica are the top Latin American countries with the most gringo expats per capita. Yep, I've spoken to many gringos and expats who went to those particular countries, mostly because they heard so many good things about their national health care systems, which are virtually free for locals and almost free for gringos with residency. Hell, they couldn't believe it. They were getting full medical coverage for something like $20 a month. Then, as long as you were in the system and had your little health care identity card, you could go down to any public clinic or hospital and get treated. Such a deal, huh? But then again, nothing's for nothing. Though some things you have to learn the hard way. Yeah, you know, when I first got down here, I fell for that too, and I thought, hey, I have Costa Rican residency. I'm covered on their national health system. Why should I buy private insurance when I got this great national health care insurance? Then I thought, I wonder why private insurance companies exist at all. Bottom line, I bought the AARP and International Living Propaganda. That is, until one of the guys in my band in Costa Rica, a German guy, fell down on his bike and twisted his ankle, and we went down to the National Healthcare Hospital, and the line was about a half block long and 50 people deep. And then a little guy walked up to us and said, in very broken but understandable English, "Gringo, amigo, it's about a 3 or 4 hour wait." Not good, but I can help. By the way, beware of Latinos you don't know that first address you as amigo. Same thing up in Portland and Cleveland. If someone you don't know says, "Hey, friend, come here." Well, chances are he ain't your friend at all. He wants something. So anyway, the little guy who started out on the wrong foot by addressing me as amigo, he said, "You don't want to wait 3 or 4 hours. I can help." He said, I think it was for 5,000 colones, something like $10, he could get us to the front of the line. Which was antithetical to us, a real no-no in the States to take cuts. Up in Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, Seattle, you could definitely get your ass whooped for that. So we looked around at that long line, turned to him and said, "No, that's okay. I don't think the people in this line would appreciate that." Then he said, no, amigo, this is my job." Turns out he was a professional line stander, a placeholder. Of course, we paid the dough because my German friend was in pain and his ankle was twice the size of the other one. Yep, that's the national healthcare system as it applies to gringos and expats, because the locals, they can't afford $10 to get to the front of the line. And if they could, they wouldn't rely on national healthcare. They'd have a private healthcare plan where you get 80 to 100% full coverage, first world style, with almost no long lines or standing and waiting around. But really, doesn't it make you wonder, at least a little bit, why there are so many private insurance plans in Latin American countries? Obviously, it's because the national health care plans that every country has completely suck. Though, you longtime listeners may have heard me say many times on this show, there are times when Latin American national health care systems are very good, but never are they consistent, which is a big problem because you don't know when you're going to get sick, meaning you never know if the national health care plan's on the upswing and everything's working pretty good, or the downswing, where it appears you've gone back in time to the 18th century. Though, strangely enough, you can usually plot it out on a graph. It looks like a sine wave with the peak or the most efficient and best treatment occurring right before national election time. Isn't that funny? Suddenly, right before election time, money, maintenance, and equipment get injected into the system, and everybody's happy. Oh, and the party empowers publicity machines running overtime singing the praises about it too. Then, predictably, after the elections and all the hubbub has died down, suddenly you start seeing all kinds of reports in the press and in the media that the national healthcare system is dead broke again and they've got no gloves, syringes, or disposables. In fact, I once snapped a very good picture of a doctor's lounge in the National Healthcare Hospital in Guatemala City. It shocked the hell out of me. I saw a big sign on the bulletin board right in the lounge by the coffee machine. It said, and believe me, I had to read it twice to let it sink in, "Attention doctors, please bring your own gloves and disposables. We're fresh out, so bring your own." Hey, if you think that's hyperbole, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you that photo. It's in Spanish, of course, but you'll get the idea. And if you think it's just the national healthcare hospitals in Guatemala that really suck, you'd be dead wrong. I hear from doctors all over Latin America that tell me they would never submit themselves or their families to the ordeal of going to a national healthcare hospital. They go with private hospitals all the way. Isn't it funny that all Latin American doctors have private healthcare insurance? At least everyone I've ever spoken to, and I've spoken to dozens and dozens of them. That should say it all. Now, about Latin American doctors, you know, there's some very, very good ones, trained absolutely first world style. A lot of them went out of the country to get their specialties, too. So then there's a legit question you might ask. What are they doing practicing medicine in national healthcare hospitals? Well, there's generally three reasons for that. Number one, some Latin countries and their medical boards insist, as part of a doctor's medical training, that he does his residency in a national healthcare hospital. So you see, most all Latin American doctors will spend at least a year at one of the national healthcare hospitals after they graduate. The second is you'll find a lot of Latin doctors with a heart will spend a morning, afternoon, or day a week at a national healthcare hospital just because poor people need to be served. For example, my favorite Guatemalan dentist, Dr. Alex, who's actually a U.S.-trained oral surgeon. Now, he doesn't like to talk about it, but he donates one day a week to the national healthcare hospital, doing free surgeries on mostly poor and indigenous people who have really bad dental and facial problems like cleft palates. So you'll find a lot of good Latin American doctors donating their time at one of the national health hospitals just because they have a heart. Reason number three you'll find some very good doctors at national healthcare clinics is that they may not be so busy at their own private offices. This is true for many young doctors fresh out of school. And, you know, they'll freely admit how crappy those hospitals are. Though somehow, first world rags like AARP and International Living continuously run articles and blogs saying, "Hey, come on down to Latin America. If you have health problems and your healthcare costs in the States are way too high, not to worry. You can get in on the national healthcare system in so-and-so country in Latin America and completely eliminate those crushing first world medical costs from your budget." Now, I'm not saying that never happens. Problem is, national healthcare systems ride with the political tide. It's boom and bust, and always a flip of the coin whether you're going to have a good or bad experience. Is that how you want to deal with you or your family's healthcare? Are you a good coin flipper? How's your luck? By the way, when you flip a coin in Latin America, they don't say heads or tails. They say cara o escudo. That means face or shield. So what's that mean? Well, turns out years ago when coins were really gold or silver, real money with intrinsic value, not like the junk you have in your pockets today. Back then, the majority of them had a big swollen hydrocephalic head of a genocidal dictator on one side. That was heads. And on the reverse, a shield. You know, like a shield a knight would carry into battle. Thus you have face or shield. Cara, which is face, or escudo, shield. Now, of course, nothing taxes a national healthcare system like an epidemic or pandemic, whether real, imaginary, or just plain exaggerated. Hopefully, you'll never have to find that out for yourself, and you never will if you've got private insurance. If you really want to know what's happening at the national healthcare level during this pandemic, well, you're going to find out because I have an eye-opening article for you coming out of Mexico News Daily. And I'll paraphrase this as usual to cut out the boring and redundant parts. The title of the article? Mexican National Hospital Staff Reports 4 COVID Patients Died Due to Power Outage. All right, so with all the COVID virus news, you might not think that's such a big thing. Anything can happen, right? Listen to this. It says, emergency generator failed to start at Jalisco National Public Hospital. A failed generator caused the death of 4 coronavirus patients connected to ventilators in a Guadalajara hospital, according to the staff at Zapopan's Valentin Gomez Farias Government Workers Hospital. You got that? It's a national healthcare government workers' hospital. Then it says, during a four-hour power outage due to rains in the area on Sunday, the emergency generator failed to kick in, and power was lost to the ventilators helping patients breathe. Chief radiologist Dr. Benjamin Munez said the hospital's maintenance department was at fault for neglecting to replace a defective battery in the unit. According to colleagues, he said the generator failed for several hours, no power at all. They didn't have a portable emergency generator. That would have been the solution because the patients on the seventh floor in the COVID area with the ventilators are 100% dependent on the power. Dr. Munez said, maintenance problems have been ongoing at the National Healthcare Hospital. So frustrated, he actually filmed maintenance workers improperly disposing of hospital liquids earlier this year. And Dr. Munez himself was personally sanctioned and on the verge of being fired for reporting the incident, with his termination process put on hold due to the coronavirus emergency. Then it says various members of the hospital's medical staff, supported by various healthcare workers' unions, have complained about shoddy maintenance in the past. And when they did complain, they incurred threats and retaliation, risking dismissal. Dr. Munez also added, quote, people have pointed out to the director of the hospital the negligence and the ineptitude of the persons in charge of maintenance. And in addition to workplace harassment, he says, staff members who complain are the ones that suffer, especially Munez, who formally accused the hospital maintenance department of corruption. Meanwhile, the National Healthcare Hospital union representative, his name is Diego Torres, he said it was commonplace for Mexican public hospital workers to be fired after denouncing deficiencies in maintenance infrastructure or lack of medical supplies, saying it's undeniable that the Mexican government does not invest adequately in their healthcare system. In fact, conditions and maintenance problems are so bad in Mexican national healthcare hospitals that the union workers and representatives have announced a national strike and protest at public hospitals taking place July 1st. So I guess that happened a couple of days ago. With demonstrations planned for Jalisco, Guerrero, Chiapas, Baja California, Veracruz, Hidalgo, and Coahuila. So there you have it. Who are you going to believe? Doctors and staff working at these Mexican national healthcare hospitals, or those glossy rags like AARP and International Living, who never fail to put a bright and happy spin on practically everything they grind out? Meanwhile, here on the Expat Files Living in Latin America, we promise to give you the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. By the way, I'd like to thank Michael R. for sending me that article. All right. Speaking of 43 more reasons why I don't recommend Mexico for your plan B, comes this news out of Mexico dated June 30th, 2020. Turns out Mexican prosecutors have requested 46 arrest orders for public officials in one small city. You got that? Not just anybody. We're talking about 46 public officials going to be arrested over charges of forced disappearance and organized crime as part of a probe into the disappearance of 43 students from the same school who disappeared without a trace in 2014. The article goes on to say since 2014, when the case was first investigated, they've uncovered official police violations and missteps in handling of the case, including torture, arbitrary arrests, and hiding of evidence. Officers originally on the case being accused of fraud, manipulating data, and mishandling evidence. And now, with Interpol warrants out indicating many of the 46 accused government officials in the plot, including top official Tomas Cerón, having fled the country. Now let's pretend we're the detectives here. Can you, off the top of your head, think of a place where indicted and convicted Latin American political scumbags usually end up buying luxury houses and condos? Let's see. I'll give you a hint. It starts with an M and ends with a jammy. Oh, and speaking of Mexico, there's always a never-ending stream of bad news coming out of that place. Can you think of any good news coming out of there? If you can, let me know. Yet, I still get emails from expat wannabes up in the States saying they're 100% on track with getting out of Dodge and their destination, Mexico. In fact, just yesterday I got a call from a publicity agent for a guy who wrote a book that's on the Amazon bestseller list on the joys and wonders of gringos and expats moving to Mexico. Turns out the publicist wanted some free publicity, wanted me to interview the guy on this show. And you know I don't do that. Not because I don't like doing interviews. I used to do them all the time, but before this show. The fact is, it's just too hard to set up the logistics, and whether by nature or just because I'm slipping into old age, I just want a simple life. I don't want to complicate things, and setting up interviews, times, dates, and juggling schedules, that to me involves a lot of wasted time. Not to mention in this guy's case, you think I'm going to put a guy on this show whose whole spiel is the joys of moving to Mexico? Obviously, neither the guy nor his publicist has ever listened to one of my shows. Nope, I don't think I want to embarrass the guy on the air, you know? Though it might be fun just needling him to death. But still, so many expat gonna-bes and wannabes look to Mexico for their plan B because it's just an easy shot south of the border. In fact, it's the first country south of the border, thus making it very easy to slip back and forth to the States. Meanwhile, as if we needed another reason to stay away from Mexico, we've got this confession that came out June 19, 2020, where the Mexican president says he ordered last year's release of El Chapo's son. Remember that big brouhaha? In fact, he announced last Friday that he was personally behind one of the most embarrassing episodes in Mexico's history that proved beyond the shadow of a doubt that the narcos are in complete control of that country, not elected officials. That, in fact, elected officials are owned by the narcos. Now, if you remember, last year, El Chapo Guzman's son was captured in a manhunt. And then, after a gun battle in which 14 people died, they decided to release the guy. Because the cartel announced if they didn't, more would die. More to the point, the arrest of Olvido Guzman Lopez, the son of Chapo, last October 17 led to a prolonged gun battle with the cops, and then he was released. Now, you might remember seeing this on TV yourself, because I know it was broadcast all over the place in Mexico, though I don't know how much got up to the States. But you could watch, in real time, an actual war going on, with automatic gunfire every couple seconds that ended only after outgunned military and police units retreated and then handed Guzman, El Chapo's son, over to his narco confederates. Providing further evidence to the world, of course, and everybody in Mexico knows this, that criminal gangs and narcos are in charge, not the cops, the military, or the politicians. Now, for a while after the incident in the Mexican press, people sucking up to the president were writing articles saying that Guzman, the son, is just that, guilty by association. The son of a narco, not a narco himself. However, the real story is that both Elvidio Guzman Lopez, the son, and his older brother, Joaquin Guzman Lopez, are facing drug trafficking charges up in the States and are wanted fugitives that, if caught, will be extradited to the States like their old man. Then it goes on to say, and you probably know this already, Guzman's up in the States because he can't get a fair trial in Mexico because every straight judge and lawyer in the country is afraid to prosecute him. Because he has a history of wiping out his enemies and their families. And what's worse, and even more embarrassing internationally, the Mexican president received a call from Donald Trump a day or two after the screwed-up operation, with Trump offering to send some SWAT teams and firepower down to take care of the situation. But the corrupt, candy-ass Mexican president said he declined the offer, as well as a similar offer from Trump following the killings in November of 9 students who were dual U.S.-Mexican citizens. Remember that? Those Mormon women and children who were ambushed and killed in Sonora, Mexico? Now, for you guys and gals out there who have been following this case and following Mexican President López Obrador's spineless career, you know that in his 18 months of office, he's completely avoided confrontations with the country's cartels, describing his hands-off approach as hugs, not bullets. So how's that working for you, Señor Presidente? Meanwhile, most Mexican residents with a half a brain know the president's on the take. In fact, many independent journalists have written that he's friends with the Chapo family, since he recently went to Sinaloa on Chapo's son's birthday, shaking hands and taking pictures with Chapo's mother. And afterward having a private conversation with Chapo's lawyer. That would be like Franklin Delano Roosevelt shaking hands and taking pictures with Al Capone's mother. And for all you guys and gals out there thinking, well, so what if Trump called him? He can't do anything about it. That would violate a country's sovereignty. To send in troops and SWAT teams to a country you're not at war with would be illegal. Yeah, right, like the U.S. has never conducted those kind of operations before. Besides, here's a statistic that'll blow your mind. The U.S., Uncle Slam, maintains nearly 800 military bases in more than 70 foreign countries. So then, what are they doing there on foreign soil?
if not to help out with problems just like the one Mexico's having with the narcos. I tell you, Mexico's a lost cause. It's a narco state through and through. And really, I feel sorry for Americans, gringos, and expats living there who've got property and such. Yes, I know there are some very nice places in Mexico. Hey, I like taking a little vacation to Cancun once in a while myself. But as things get worse, economically and socially, and now that for all intents and purposes marijuana has been legalized in Canada and the States, putting a big dent in the narco business. The question is, how long are you gringos and expats living in your protected little paradise islands of prosperity in Mexico? How long will you remain untouchable? You're not untouchable, you're the next target. Look, already, bad guys with guns are picking on tourists and gringos and expats living on the outskirts of previously untouchable cities like Cancun. You knew that already, right? But then again, who am I to chip away at someone else's fantasy? So let's just leave it at that. I'm not really trying to convince anybody of anything. Only to say that I've been living in Latin America with boots on the ground about 30 years now. And I don't think I'd be sticking my neck out much by saying I've been living here in Latin America longer, have seen and experienced more things than the next half dozen pro-Mexican bloggers and influencers. Though I could be wrong, I don't think so. Oh, and one last thing about Mexico. You longtime listeners, or at least people who've been listening to the show for the past year, you might remember a couple of months ago I mentioned that I was baffled to see that the remisa numbers, you know, the amount of dollars sent back from Mexicans in the States to their families in Mexico, did not crash or tumble as you might expect with the corona lockdown since everyone's home and quarantined. I mentioned on that show that I didn't get it. I couldn't understand what was happening. It didn't make sense. Coincidentally, now, or a couple of days ago anyway, comes an article out of Bloomberg on that very subject. The title? Get this. Economists are baffled how Mexicans can send so much money home. So let me just highlight a little bit of this article. It says, remittances to Mexico surged in May, confounding the majority of economists who expected the weakest U.S. job market in decades to take a heavy toll on Mexicans and migrant workers up in the States. Instead, it says, money sent home by Mexicans abroad increased by 3% from a year earlier, whereas economists were forecasting a big year-on-year decline due to corona, with the average monthly remisa amount being around $320. So then, how's that possible? You tell me. Enough said about that. Now, I'd like to mention once again that my August 2020 Expat Insider Seminar has been canceled. Actually, it's been moved up to January. Again, because of the schizophrenic nature of bureaucrats making the rules for airports. As you probably know, a lot of people are predicting a second wave, whether it's BS or not, meaning we don't have the all clear yet, whether we're talking about U.S. or Latin American airports. So as for canceling the August seminar, I just don't want to take the chance that an attendee might get stuck in a bureaucratic loop at an airport. It would be no fun to get stuck there in quarantine. I fully appreciate that, so we've rescheduled the seminar. The new dates, January 8th through 14, 2021. Now, I know it's some months away, but I do have the detailed sign-up sheet with the early bird discounts at expatplanb.com, so check it out. Just a word of advice, I'm very sure it'll fill up to the limit. The limit is 25 people. The fact is, since the COVID thing, I've been getting an unprecedented amount of email, mostly from people who, before the virus thing, had been on the fence regarding getting the hell out of Dodge and really getting serious about their Plan B. And you know, even before the COVID thing, every day I'd get emails from people saying, Johnny, I'm with you 100%. I'm on board. I'm going to get that Plan B going. But not right now. I've got a kid in college, got 4 years to retire. I've got a couple properties to get rid of. Don't want to dip into my 401k just yet. Got grandma in the nursing home. I'll be sure to get on that Plan B when she croaks. Yep, before this coronavirus thing, I heard every excuse why a Plan B had to be put off for a couple of years. But now that the reset button's been pushed, it's as if everyone who'd been sitting on the fence just sat on a rusty nail. So again, I expect the seminar to fill up fast. Don't miss out. Sign up soon. Don't procrastinate. Get in on those early bird discounts. And remember, if you're looking to save $750 off the price of a single, it's pretty much a guarantee that I can hook you up with a roommate to share double occupancy. Check out the sign-up sheet at expatplanb.com. Oh, and here's another important piece of news. If you recall, on the June 28th show, I mentioned the availability of an amazing fast-track 60-day Caribbean Island passport by investment program.
a program that just came about due to the fact that the coronavirus has completely wiped out tourism in Latin America and the Caribbean, and now governments are absolutely broke. So in this case, not only do you get the passport in 60 days, you can do the entire application process online, and you only have to make one trip to the country to pick it up. Now, after I made that announcement, I had lots of inquiries and quite a few questions. Now, the fact is that passport program's not cheap, though not killer expensive either. Plus, and this is the part I forgot to mention, I believe, though I still have to verify this, the majority of the money you put into that investment program to get that passport is held in a government bank CD, a zero interest CD, but I believe you get the majority of the money back after 5 years. Now, I'm not exactly sure on the numbers or the amounts of that CD and how much you get back, but I'll know that by the next show, so stay tuned. But man, if that's true, that makes this an even more spectacular deal. For all the info and the scoop, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And now, on a somber note, I'm asking to beg your pardon. I'm taking a knee and apologizing for my podcast privilege. Yep, I admit, I've got podcast privilege. Look, I know it's entirely unfair that people listen to me and people like me instead of, let's say, my own brother, who's smarter, funnier, and quicker on the draw than I am. Yet he's a complete unknown and no one pays him any mind because he has no podcast. Thus, no podcast privilege. And by today's standards, he's got every right in the world to get pissed, even sue me. So who could blame people who don't have a podcast if they want to picket, protest, and stop the wheels of progress? Though that's not the only reason I'm taking a knee and begging your forgiveness. Because down here in Latin America, I've also got blue eye privilege too. I've known it for a long time, and people, especially girls, whisper behind my back about it all the time. Worse yet, coupled with the gringo advantage, just a nice way of saying gringo privilege, I guess me and all the blue-eyed gringos here in Latin America owe the world an apology. The Latino world, anyway. So I'm begging your pardon, asking for your forgiveness, and hoping you'll forgive my trespasses and accept my apology. Of course, talk is cheap, but I plan on walking the walk, too. Though I can't do anything about my height or my gringo accent. I have gone on Amazon and ordered a pair of brown contact lenses. It's a start. Oh, and I'd like to call out George Lucas for his totally insensitive portrayal of Darth Vader. I vowed never to see another Star Wars movie till Vader wears white and embraces the light force. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.